Hey folks, we've got a new workshop coming up that I'm really excited about. This is a topic that I don't talk about a whole lot on the show. This is September 23rd at noon, and this is going to be about debt. I find a lot of the teaching on this particular topic is not so great. It's very one-sided, or it misses a lot of detail that I think really needs to be addressed. You know, how do we get into it? We talk about that a little bit, but there, you know, some people say, well, you'd get into it because of lack of discipline. Well, no, it often is more nuanced than that. We're going to be talking about how do you get out of it? How do we change our mindset regarding it in lots of different ways? Some of the best advice I was ever given was like over 30 years ago that helped me a lot. And I'm going to share some of that in the workshop. And we're going to talk about the little known facts and myths about credit scores. A lot of people don't understand how credit scores work. So I'm going to get into that. And people ask about, now, Paul, what about 30 versus 15-year mortgages? And people think you always do one or the other. And that's more nuanced as well. And I'm going to be talking about strategically when to use one versus another and some of the thinking regarding that. So it's going to be a great workshop. I'm really excited about it. September 23rd at noon. Join us, and you can click in the show notes to sign up or go to paulwinkler.com/debt. We'll see you there.
Welcome to the Investor Coaching Show, a podcast to help you get an insider's view of the financial world and escape common investment traps. We look at the financial news of the day and help you make sense of it so you can relax about money. And here's your host, Paul Winkler.
And a big welcome. This is the Investor Coaching Show. And I am Paul Winkler, talking about the world of money and investing. On rather a sober day, as many people are talking about today. Big day 20 years ago. You know, it's. Everybody keeps asking this, where were you? Where were you when it happened? And, you know, it's, to me, you know, I look back and go, wow, you know, I actually had started this radio show 20 years ago. So it was literally around this time, I can't remember exactly, I think it was just literally just after, I think the anniversary for this show is in, I want to say it's November, December, I should know that. I should know that. But it was literally right after this time because I had, and you know, back at that point in time, I was traveling around, had a four-year-old son. That's how old Alex was at that point in time. And we had traveled up to, of all places, New York at that point in time. So went to New York. That's where I grew up. My parents lived in around Albany, New York. So I flew up there and had a one-year-old son. Went to visit them and just to see how they were doing. And I'll never forget sitting at the dining room table. My father was sitting there. And he goes, Paul. And I said, what? And he said, look. And I looked at the TV and saw what was going on. And it was just absolutely, as most of you were, absolutely shocked at what I was seeing. And that was a wake-up call at that point in time. And, you know, being in the investing world, of course, you know, probably have to address some of those types of things as well. But just watching that happen and watching that all take place and then all of a sudden realizing, oh my goodness, I think we're stuck here. You know, we were supposed to leave like the next day or something like that. You know, so we were supposed to leave and then we got stuck in New York, my son and I, my four-year-old son and I, and talking to my wife, seeing how everything was going back there and just not knowing what was happening. And then having that feeling of, oh man, okay, I can't get back to, you know, back to Nashville. And then, of course, you know, all the airlines shut down, everything shut down because nobody knew what was going on. It was just eerily quiet, looking up in the sky and absolutely seeing no air traffic whatsoever because my parents didn't live that far from an airport. And, you know, just seeing absolutely nothing going on and not knowing what on earth was going to happen and the speeches and then hearing the stories, the guy that's been so talked about out there that was on that flight and, you know, rushing the cockpit and just amazing stories coming out of that. And then, you know, our military going into action and, you know, how, you know, just how that all unfolded is just was so surreal. But, and Leviticus, you and I were just talking just a second ago regarding stock market stuff. And
yes.
What happened? Yeah, you know, you were asking something about, you know, how was the market? What was your question regarding that?
So my question was, or is, let's just say you're brave for saying your age. I was around when
how old were you? I didn't even know how old you are. So how old you were at that point in time? We were around, but my goodness.
Yeah, I just popped out in the known. Okay.
Really? Seriously? Okay. Okay.
Okay. Let me stop joking. Serious, but yes. I do tip my hat off to the firefighters, everyone that served this country, everyone that serves this country, past, present and future.
Sure thing. That's where my family all came from, as a matter of fact. We have a family of firefighters, ambulance people, police, you know, and military. So it's all, you know, all of the above. Yeah, so absolutely.
Yes, yes. So my question is, how did the stock market change after that incident? Did it go up?
That's interesting.
Believe it or not, well, I'm pretty sure you know, stock markets for some companies does go up, especially if we're going into, let's just say, war.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, what happened, it was just surreal because it was so close to the New York Stock Exchange that this happened, that the NYSE, New York Stock Exchange, and the NASDAQ, they didn't even open. They didn't even open that day, you know, because it was so close at that point in time, you know, because the North Tower was hit like, 8:46 or something like that. And then the South Tower was hit at 9:03, you know, not too long afterward. And they just literally, this was just a few blocks from Wall Street, so nothing happened. Nobody opened or anything like that. And the problem was is that a lot of the communications were knocked out. And back then, you had a lot of the communications were very, very important. A lot of the trading was done actually physically, people there on the floor. And you remember people, you know, you watch these TV programs and people are waving around sheets of paper. And the stock market is a bidding or an auction place is really what it is. So when I buy a stock, there are different companies that actually own an inventory in that stock. That's the way the market works. You have what are called market makers. And the market makers own an inventory and people bid on them. And it's very, very, very competitive. And at that point in time, a lot of it was people literally in person doing that trading. And what has happened since, how it's changed to answer your question, is it's a lot more electronic these days now. So from one perspective, there's less physical risk of something happening at that location. But there's, you know, now you've got more cyber attack concerns, so to speak, regarding stock markets, which could knock them offline for a while and until you can actually, you know, get the computers back working again. But literally at that point in time, it was shut down for that reason. It was shut down for the reason that, you know, we didn't have, you know, really no idea what was going down. It was shut down for the entire week is really what ended up happening. So you had a plunge in the stock market in general. In most stock market segments actually went down. There was like a $1.4 trillion loss in market value as that happened. And really, the reason comes down to, well, why? Well, it's because we don't know what's going on. And one of the things that is a good teaching tool regarding this, when you're looking at the stock market and going, so how do stocks get priced? They get priced based on the present value of future earnings of companies. Well, nothing happened to the earnings of those companies immediately as a result of this. The stock market responds to what might happen in the future, which is a really good teaching moment to understand how markets work. It's news that drives the market either up or down. And the news was, we've got uncertainty. Anytime you have uncertainty, investors require a higher rate of return in order to take risk. So, you know, let's say just from a standpoint that I need to have, let's say, a 10% return on my money. And let's say that, you know, forget about growth and earnings or anything like that, just to help people understand how markets work. Let's say that my earnings for a company are $1 billion and that the price of the company, if I want to buy the whole thing, is $10 billion. So it's 1 divided by 10 is 10%. If all of a sudden I require a 20% return on my money, let's say, just to use a really, you know, a really high example just to make the point, I would require a 20% return, and there's only one way I can do that. The earnings haven't changed, right? Because nothing really happened yet to the earnings of the companies. But literally, the risk went significantly up. And what will happen is the stock price will go down to 5, in my example, to give me that earnings yield. 1 divided by 5 equals 20%. And that's how markets work. So that's one of the things that happened. The other aspect of it, and you can't really figure out how everything works together, but the other aspect of it is this. If all of a sudden there is this new thing that has happened called terrorism on American soil and people using airplanes to commit terrorism or whatever acts that they may have up their sleeve, there also could be an effect, a negative effect on profits as well. So let's say that there was no additional required return that was needed and no additional risk requiring more return. So, you know, forget the 1 over 10, 1 over 5 thing, but let's just look strictly at the earnings side of things. And let's say that that ratio is 1 over 10 normally, and all of a sudden it looks like earnings are going to drop 20%. Well, what will happen is that means that the $1 billion of earnings is going to be $800 million. And that would mean that instead of, you know, a 1 to 10 ratio, it would be 0.8 to 8 ratio to keep things all the same. So again, what did our stock do? It went from 10 down to 8. So we have that drop in market prices. And that's what happened for most of the market in that particular week. It was an entire week where that was going on. And it was partially because of this uncertainty, but you can imagine the market being closed down, nobody can make any trades, and they're just chomping at the bit, wanting to do what? Sell. Well, there were some stocks that actually went up in value, as you can imagine, kind of like you said, Leviticus, it was like, you know, what actually went up? Well, some sectors, like defense and weapons contractors, because all of a sudden we're realizing, hey, we're likely to be at war. And those particular stocks went up because that would mean the government has to start to purchase weapons of war, and therefore companies that make these things have the potential to make more profits. So those shares actually increased at that time. Now, there weren't enough of them, you know, to offset the declining stocks in other areas. So the market in general went down. And you also had some technology companies that benefited because it was looking like these technology companies would be needed in the effort as well. And then you had communications and pharmaceutical firms as well, which is kind of odd. You go, well, why pharmaceutical firms? You know, it's, who knows? It may have been believed that somehow, you know, that there was some kind of a biological agent was going to be put out there in pharmaceutical firms. You know, who knows? I don't know what the thinking was at that point in time. But in essence, you had most of the market actually went down. And a lot of the vulnerability of physical destruction was causing people a lot of concern. So literally what happened is, and you can see where technology would come in here, is we started to gravitate over to being more of an electronic trading platform, and that's what the NASDAQ is. So where you have these market makers where you physically had companies that hold shares in companies, and you know, you have multiple companies, for example, that own Coca-Cola stock, for example. And it was a bidding marketplace where you have all these different companies that own Coca-Cola stock. Well, who will sell it to me for the cheapest? Well, that's who I'm going to buy it off of. And who will give me the most for it if I'm the seller, that's who I'm going to sell it to. So it's a very competitive marketplace. And now since then, you have a lot more electronic trading. And now a lot of people have demonized electronic trading, saying, oh, this is terrible, it's awful, it's, you know, it's bad for the market, you know, it's rigged and blah, blah, blah. No, actually the cost of trading has significantly come down since then for that very reason. You know, so that has been a big outcome of what happened after 9/11 is saying, okay, let's take this and let's bring it up to date. Let's make it something that's a little bit more modern. And as far as what happened with the market, overall, it went down significantly. Now, what happened after that is really quite telling. It was a tough time to start a radio show, and that's literally when I started the show, was at that point in time. But literally what happened, which was, it was a hard time to coach investors through this, is I had to explain those things I just explained to you all. That's what I was having to explain to people and say, hey, look, guys, do not panic. That is the worst thing you can do right now is panic, because literally what's happening is investors buying shares in companies demand a higher rate of return. And if you are the seller, you're giving up that higher expected rate of return. You're basically selling for a fraction of what the stock sold for before. And the expected return, because of the additional risk, has actually gone up. So you're literally selling at a very point in time where the future expected returns, because of the low price compared to earnings, that ratio, you're literally selling into that, which is usually ends up ending badly for people, really gets down to it. And one of the things that I did is I actually did a little research on what happened after that.
Thanks, Paul.
Yeah, man. Absolutely, Leviticus. Yeah, good question. And it's just, you go, yeah, how does this kind of stuff happen? You know, what does, but it really tells you a lot about the markets and how they respond to new information. And if you're going to try to figure out where markets are going to go, you get these people that try to figure out, hey, is it going to go up? Is it going to go down? I'm going, no. Do you realize that most information about the market, and if you look at market returns, it's mostly driven by new news? You got to be that person that's able to predict the news in order to predict market direction. That's kind of a daunting task. And
or the weather.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we can't even predict the weather, let alone, you know, things like this, events like this, and especially as impactful as this particular event was historically. It was a real teaching tool for, you know, what goes on in markets and how they respond to new information. It really is. All right. Let's change gears now. We are commemorating the 20-year anniversary of 9/11, and I was just actually looking on Facebook. My wife had actually put something out there about, you know, when my son and I were up in New York visiting my parents, and just that whole conversation back and forth, talking to her, and it was just surreal. The whole thing is surreal, and I think enough. So many people have been talking about this today. For good reason as to where they were and what was happening. You know, and we were just talking a little bit about the stock market. What was going on in the stock market as an investor? A scary time as a person investing, and people that were going into retirement at that time. A lot of people, you know, going into retirement and then actually watching their investments go up in smoke, literally, from year 2000. Because most American investors are primarily in big U.S. companies. You know, I've talked about this, the major mutual fund companies like the Fidelities and the Vanguards and the American funds, typically they focus on, well, and just not those, just those. I mean, if you look at the target date funds and the pre-allocated portfolios for any of the major mutual fund companies, I don't know one that doesn't fall into this. Mainly, that's what they focus on, is big U.S. companies, because of familiarity. We know who they are. We're familiar with them. So fund companies overweight those areas because American investors like that. But it's not necessarily good for them. And I'm going to talk a little bit about what happened since that particular week. But, you know, if you looked at the year 2000, large U.S. companies had dropped 9%. And then the next year, they dropped another 12%. And then after, you know, we go through 2001, which of course was when the original 9/11 actually occurred, that we're commemorating, it was a 22% drop in the S&P 500 that year. In technology, it was even greater. It was an even bigger drop in technology stocks over that three-year period, about an 80% decline. And, you know, some of the biggest mutual fund companies, the most popular mutual fund companies, and you often hear people, they will laud certain fund companies. Oh, you know, you ought to put your money with this fund company. And I just shake my head going, you know, a lot of the fund companies that are get a lot of popularity are due to all the wrong reasons. Back then, it was because of great past performance. Now, fund companies are actually, you know, they're competing on price only. Some are, they're still competing on performance, and that because that is a big draw. And it's perfect storm, as I put it in one of my workshops right now, is because you, well, not right now, but up till the end of last year anyway, it was because the area of the market that's cheapest to manage, which is large U.S. stocks, also happen to have the best performance over a five-year period. And that's a perfect storm because you got two things that people want. High returns, low cost have really drawn people in, and that area of the market has not dropped. Now, it hasn't done as well as other areas of most other areas of the stock market, like smaller companies and value companies and so on and so forth. But it has not dropped in value, so there hasn't been a rude awakening like what happened 20 years ago. You know, there hasn't been this rude awakening. So a lot of investors are still feeling a little bit bulletproof. More about that in a second. But I was looking at old headlines and preparing for today's show, and I saw the CNN Money headline, "Brutal Week on Wall Street. Stocks slide for a fifth day." So what happened is you had the market decline on, you know, market didn't even open, but you had markets dropping when it finally did open day after day after day. And this was September 21st, of course. So the market had opened finally and then just dropped. When it finally did open, investors weren't terribly excited about going and buying stocks. So if they were going to step up to the plate and buy stocks, they were paying very, very low prices when they did. Again, trying to build in for themselves a greater expected return or a greater potential return, because you never know what's going to happen, but it was a greater potential return by paying a very, very low price for every dollar of earnings that were likely to come in. So that was why the markets had dropped. But if you looked at what happened, the Dow dropped 14.2% in that particular week. It was the worst five-day performance since the Great Depression. So yes, people were very, very scared. You know, back in 1933, you had one week, which was the week of August 22nd in 1933. The market dropped 16%, almost 17%, 16.66. The next worst week was 1940, we're seeing, you know, what's happening with, you know, getting World War II starting to crank up and 15.48% drop. And then 1932 was the third worst, was it was in October of 1932, 15.15% negative week. The next one down, that was 9/21 of 2001. And that was a week that ended down 14.26%. So tremendous, tremendous drop in that period of time. Now, if you look back at what happened after that, and you go, wow, you know, that's a really, really tough time. And you're watching stocks drop like that, and you're thinking, man, it's just going to get worse and worse. All I'm hearing is bad news. Well, when they jumped back up, it was pretty doggone rapid. And you had stocks, U.S. stocks strike back, literally the same publication, just a couple days later. Just a couple days later, there was the same publication, CNN Money, comes out with U.S. stocks strike back. And there were corporate comments, positive analyst comments that lifted stocks, and they jumped up because people said they're oversold. So think about who benefited from that. Anybody that took the risk and either stayed in or bought, they benefited significantly when the markets bounced back. And that's exactly what happened. You had this next Monday. And the problem is you can't get in time. You know, when news comes out, that's good. If you want to buy in, the price that you have to pay has already jumped back up. And that's literally what happened to investors. They just got blindsided by stocks dropping then, and then when they got out, if they were the ones that sold, when they went back up, you couldn't get back in. If you actually look at a chart of the stock market that particular day, it's straight up. And then it goes and trades, you know, moves up and down, up and down, up and down, and goes sideways as the day progresses. But the new price, you couldn't get in at the old price. It was too late. Now, if you look at from that point in time, if you were one of these people that said, okay, you know what, I'm not going to panic, and this is what I was doing, you know, literally going in and saying, clients, guys, do not worry. Do not panic. Markets, here's the way they work. Explaining what, I've been explaining to you. And from that point in time, if you look at what areas of the market did best from 9/22 of 2001 through Friday, this past Friday, and you see the small emerging market stocks, that was the top area of the market. And you go, wow, wait a minute, emerging markets? You know, these little countries that, you know, and small companies. Now, this is an area of the market that you virtually almost never see in 401k. I've never seen one in a 401k plan. Let me say that. I've never seen a fund that captures that area of the market. It's an area that I like to capture simply because I like to have in my portfolio, simply because there are three factors that drive 95% of the level of returns of your portfolio. This is Nobel Prize winning research that says this. And that's an area of the market you would expect higher returns long run. Emerging markets, higher risk areas of the market, small companies. But here's the reason that it's helpful. Yes, it has higher expected return, but it also can reduce the risk of a portfolio because it doesn't move with everything else. Now, indeed, this came to fruition over the last 20 years because this area of the market is almost up 14% year over that 14% per year over that period of time. And then you look at value, emerging markets value stocks, another area of the market you would expect higher returns because why? Because they're value, they're more distressed emerging markets companies. And that's about 13, just shy of 13% return over that period of time. That was the second highest performing area of the market. Third highest was microcap, very, very small. And again, these all three of these asset categories you virtually never see in 401ks or retirement plans or not a lot of fund companies actually focus on this. Why? Because American investors, they like their big U.S. companies. It's familiarity bias. But you look at what benefited the most after that point in time, that's it. There's number one, two, and three. Small cap U.S. companies, so it's the next one down the line. You do see that in some fund companies. And then you got emerging markets. That was the next one, large emerging market companies. And then the next one is small value stocks, which is again another two risk factors, small and value. And that was the next highest returning. You don't even get into until you get down to number nine in the list, large U.S. stocks, which is what most American investors focus their efforts on. It doesn't even show up as being a top performing area of the market until number nine out of 12. You know, so you can see why I'm so adamant that I talk about, you know, literally making sure that you're far more diversified than investors typically end up being. And most fund companies, again, they focus on large companies because it's familiar and it's cheaper visibly. But if you say, hey, what if I put $1,000 in emerging market small companies and what did it grow to? About 13,500, answer. 1,000 grew to 13,500. Large U.S., not bad, 6,800, but significantly less, number one. And emerging markets, small companies, I looked at, you know, the expense ratio of a fund that I use, which is an institutional fund that I use, and it's nine times as high expense. You know, but the reality of it is that is an area of the market I want to have, not only and I'm telling you, returns after expenses. And that's an area of the market that I want to have simply because of the fact that it diversifies and the higher expected return. And it helps when I'm taking an income from a portfolio because, you know, you may have large U.S. stocks down like 3 years in a row. And they were 2000, 2001, 2002, you know, literally for 12 years it had a negative return. And I want to make sure that I have that. And you've had previous 1960s through the early 1980s where there was no return in large U.S. stocks. But it's just interesting to see what happened since that time and what areas of the market did well since that period of time. And it's just not what you'd expect. But it was a period in time with a lot of tumult. I mean, think of all the stuff that has happened over the past 20 years. But the investor that did not panic after 9/11, 2001, ended up doing fine as long as they didn't panic and sell out. Unfortunately, many did panic. Investment advisors panicked. And when people called their brokers and said, hey, you got to get me out, too often the brokers just said, okay, I'll get you out, because they didn't want to lose them as clients. And my point is always this, and I always tell, you know, all my folks, I said, you know what? Our job is, if somebody is not going to go, you know, with a program, and they wanted to sell out, or they wanted to do something that was imprudent, I would back away. And this is the way I act. I will back away, and I will tell them, you've got to fire me. I will not be part of the problem. And too often, the investment industry is part of the problem when it gets down to it, because they want to preserve clients and preserve assets, and it's just not worth it, in my humble opinion. But, you know, looking back at all of the lessons from September 11th in 2001 and the stock market, how it responded, how the market changed, there are a lot of lessons there. And one of the biggest ones is, don't try to figure this stuff out. Don't try to figure out where markets are going. Don't figure out what's going to do best in the future, because so much of it's driven by brand new information and new news. And if you look at the past 20 years, we have had so much news that has been both good and bad that has driven markets both directions, both up and down. But as an investor, you look at those returns, those various asset categories, and every stock asset category, which is 12, there are 12 asset categories that I would hold: large, small, growth, value, U.S., international, and emerging markets. There's not a one of them that is negative over that period of time. The lowest return was 7.25% return over that period of time. And as an investor, you look at that with everything that we've been through, and you go, wow, markets, you know, do and have rewarded investors that have stayed disciplined and didn't lose focus no matter what was going on. And this was a huge one.
Hey, this is Paul Winkler. Hope you enjoyed today's edition of the Investor Coaching Show. If you want to learn more about what we do, go to our website, paulwinkler.com. You can watch some of the videos there, and if you're not already a client, you can set up a free initial consultation. Until next time, I'm Paul Winkler, reminding you that I believe that more educated investors are more confident investors, and confident investors are more successful investors. Have a great one.